In January, this podcast looked at the upcoming legislative agenda as we embarked on a new year of tort reform efforts. Since then, we have seen vigorous action in every state legislature across the country to curb abuses in our legal system. Many of those bills have been proactive measures designed to bring more fairness and balance to our legal system. Today, we get an update. Welcome to Future of Risk, presented by Zurich North America. We explore the changing risk and resilience landscape and share insights on the challenges that businesses face to help you meet tomorrow prepared. Earlier this year, we took a deeper look into social inflation and legal system abuse, and today we want to give you an update on our very first episode, the 2025 legislative landscape. But first, a quick reminder. The term social inflation refers to the rising costs of insurance claims and litigation costs beyond general economic inflation. It is driven by societal factors rather than traditional market forces, including society attitudes, legal practices, legal system abuse, and cultural norms. And the effects go beyond the insurance industry and leads to higher insurance premiums for businesses, a strain on the economy, and growing financial impacts on everyday consumers. I'm Justin Hicks, and today I'm speaking with Deidre Manna, Head of Government and Regulatory Relations at Zurich North America, and Adam Shores, Senior Vice President, State Government Relations at the American Property Casualty Insurance Association, or APCIA. Deidre and Adam, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thanks, Justin. Happy to be here today.
Wonderful. Now, as you all well know, and many of our listeners know, Zurich and the APCIA are important players in a multi-industry coalition that is actively involved in efforts to change some of the state laws that make it hard to combat some of the abusive practices. Now, back in January, we discussed the legislative landscape with both of you, and at that time, you described a very active and ambitious legislative agenda in states all across the country. And so as we approach mid-year, it seemed like a great time for us to get an update on that legislative agenda.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. I'll kick it off. I recall the podcast so well, and I can't believe it's been 6 months, but a lot has happened. And we have gotten a lot accomplished. We were able to proactively pass legislation in a lot of states and also defend legislation that we had passed in previous years. Adam and I are going to get into the specifics later, but just to mention a few on the proactive side, we accomplished a lot in Georgia, Louisiana, and other states well, like Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, Oklahoma, and New Hampshire. And that list is very long. We were also able to play defense in a lot of states where we fought back legislation that would be harmful to our efforts, particularly in Florida. And again, I'll get into that in a little bit more detail, but we had to play defense there. There are also some challenges. We weren't 100% successful, if you can believe this, in the political environment that we're in. We got some bad bills in New York. We've got a bad bill in Illinois. So as we are being proactive and being defensive, we are also not able to beat back a couple of things. But I would say that overall, we're ahead of the game here. And a couple reasons why. One is that the coalition building has been going so well. The coalition's getting larger. The interest is growing. And it's not only growing larger in number, it's also growing larger or expanding in the sectors. So we're getting more interest from the transportation, more interest from the hospitality groups, and all these different areas and customers of ours that want to know what's going on. And now they want to be active too. So that's been a big accomplishment. So overall, I would say that the momentum's there and that it's growing. I've worked on a lot of these projects over the year and the momentum starts to wane. Not here. I would say it's growing and continuing to grow, which I think is another thing that we can put in the win category.
For sure. I remember even last time that you spoke to us on Future of Risk, you talked about that the coalition had grown to include all the major insurance carriers. And I think all major Fortune 100 companies had at least awareness of it. And it's really cool to hear that there are members from other sectors outside of insurance that are getting involved as well. I think now is a good time to transition into kind of a step back and baseline question, if you will. Why is there a need for a legislative involvement in the first place? And that may sound like a simple question, but I feel like we need to kind of level set once again as far as why that's even important in the first place and why that's relevant for people.
Right. And there's a lot we can do to combat legal system abuse. And it's not just legislation, but the legislative piece of it is very important. And that's what we're really talking about today. What happened was in the 90s, there was a lot of really good tort reform or legal system abuse reform passed. And then over time, it started to erode and it wasn't being taken care of. It started to erode little by little. And so a lot of these laws and regulations came back into place, not only by legislation, but also by court cases. We've also seen a change in society that we've been trying to address as well. There's a lot of frivolous lawsuits out there. There's runaway jury verdicts. And there's a change in the attitude in the juries themselves that we're trying to combat as well. And that's really why we need the legislative fixes in a lot of these areas and a lot of these states.
Yeah, and Justin, yeah, I'll just add to that. You know, I think, you know, the heart of the matter is, in addition to everything that Deirdre outlined, is plain and simply put, the trial bar is gaming the legal system. And it's eroding the trust that Americans have in the legal system. I saw a stat recently that support for the American judicial system has dropped to an all-time low of 35%. And when you look at the billions of dollars that are injected into the legal system, maybe about half of that actually goes to award a plaintiff who the plaintiff's bar is purporting to support. So the trial attorneys are gaming this system, and they're gaming it on the backs of businesses. They're gaming it on the backs of consumers. They're gaming it on the backs of the very people that they purport to be standing up for and protecting.
Adam, I know you've mentioned this in the past. The word abuse stands out in this matter, right? Like, I mean, yeah. we're talking about abuse of our legal system and therefore abuse of Americans everywhere. I think you mentioned in our last podcast that this was something that families at the kitchen table across the country are impacted by, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Some stats that I recently saw were the costs that are now being borne by an average family of four are running about a little under $7,000 a year. So that's just increase in goods and services that are filtered through the legal system. So when you pull up to the gas pump and you're filling up your car, or when you're going to the grocery store and buying milk and eggs, part of those incremental costs, of course, there's, you know, inflationary pressures and a number of other things, but there is a portion of those higher costs that consumers are seeing that can be directly attributed to a more litigious environment that is being spurned by the trial bar because it is their primary and only source of revenue. And so why would they not do anything to expose those problems and expose those opportunities, I should say, rather, for them to make money?
Well, if you're hitting me in the pocketbook, you got my attention. I can't speak for you or anybody else, but I know that's how I feel about it, right? I have mouths to feed like so many other people. And so it's like, hey, this really matters. It really impacts everybody. So what are some of the successes that you all have had at the state level to this point in 2025? You talked about it a little bit already, Deirdre.
Yeah. Let me talk a little bit about Florida. We had to play defense there because what happened was the legislation that we got passed in 2023, the trial bar came back and was trying to undo all those changes. And we were successful. And one of the reasons we were successful is because we were able to show the results of those changes that we made in 23. And this is actually one of my favorite parts of the overall story. And that is that we have had results in Florida. It's taken a while. It took us 2 years to see a lot of these things come to fruition, but we have. So in 2023, we passed a big comprehensive reform that included 2-year statute of limitations for negligence, attorney fee reforms, a lot of different things were in the package. And so what we're seeing now is a decrease in case filings by 42%. That's a large number of filings to come down that far. The Florida used to be on the American Tort Reform Association's, what they call the judicial hellhole, where it's the worst states for legal system abuse.
I think that name Florida speaks for itself, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Florida was on that list for a long time, and it's now off of that list. The insurance market has seen improvements. There were 9 additional property casualty insurers entered into the market. Citizens, which is the insurer of last resort, it's the state insurance fund. They reduced their policy count by almost 20% in 2024. That's actually a favorite of the insurance commissioner in Florida. He loves talking about that. And this is one of the best, is that 15 insurers filed for rate decreases in 2024, with several others seeking just a 0% increase. So rates are going down. And this is after years and years in Florida of rates increasing, double-digit increases that we saw there. So that's just a great stat. And then 60% of Florida's top 10 carriers have expanded, and that's what they want. A lot of carriers were withdrawing or not writing as much in the state, and we've seen a reversal there as well. Morgan & Morgan, which is one of the big law firms, there was an article recently that said that they had actually cut back the number of attorneys in certain areas, including property. One of their areas of that they were having lawyers file lawsuits, they went from 30 lawyers in that division to just 2. So you can see that's more of a fun fact than the actual stats, but it's something that shows, again, the progress that we've made in that state.
That's incredible progress. Incredible progress. You're talking about 2 years worth of work. Decrease in case filings, policy count going down, rates going down. That's all a testament to the hard work that's being done there. That's really something special. Adam, what would you say has been happening in Georgia of late?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lessons learned from Florida that apply to Georgia. So if I could just touch on Florida briefly, and Deirdre is absolutely correct. I mean, this was a multi-year, multi-partner effort to get to where we were and to see and achieve these real results. In fact, I think just today, the insurance commissioner in Florida announced a couple of new carriers coming into the market. So every day we're seeing signs of this positive improvement. And we would not have been able to do that without the leadership of Zurich and other companies and other business voices to help paint the story of why this is so important. So that's the same story that we took to Georgia over the last year or so. And through a lot of extensive effort, there's a major coalition effort of business voices not outside of the insurance industry, but certainly including the insurance industry, working with Governor Kemp and leaders in the Georgia legislature to enact a broad package of reforms that included a number of things dealing with phantom damages, jury anchoring, premises liability, to name a few, third-party litigation funding as well. So really sort of a panoply of great reform measures that were enacted. Now our job in Georgia is basically to move to what our job has been in Florida, is to protect those reforms. And in doing so, demonstrate the value of those reforms. So we're going to have a period of time now where we want those reforms to bake in. We want to start to see tangible results, those same kind of results that Deirdre was talking about in Florida. Our hope and our desire is to see those same results now start to bear fruit in Georgia and then tell that story. And so success begets success. So if we are now going to start seeing those results in Georgia, then that helps us carry that mission to other states. And that's sort of what the broad strategy is, you know, show that success and move it into other parts of the country. So we're very happy with the work that was done in Georgia. We know there will be continuing work there. In Louisiana, for example, another state where we saw maybe not quite the fulsome amount of success that we saw in Georgia, but certainly some good movement forward in the face of some pretty strong political headwinds in terms of the trial bar influence in that state. But nonetheless, we saw some positive movement on things like no pay, no play, comparative fault, some other issues that we have long been talking about as needed reforms to move Louisiana out of that judicial hellhole mark as well. And then in addition to those states where we saw sort of a larger package of initiatives move forward, and Deirdre mentioned some of the other states as well, but on third-party litigation financing, that has been sort of a tip of the spear issue for us, where we have been moving to push for disclosure of third-party lenders in the legal system. And in a sprinkling of states across the country, we're starting to see more movement on positive legislation being enacted there. So that's also another mark of success that we've seen this year, and something that we're really excited about.
Yeah, and what I like about what's happening in the third-party litigation funding area is that there was no guardrails around that industry. So they had no rules. The insurance industry was quite the opposite. We're very heavily regulated, and we're up against an industry that's not regulated at all. And so those bills bring transparency to the system. They allow for them, for the fact that they're being used, to be entered into evidence, to let the juries know, to let the judges know. And that's what we want, is that disclosure. So we get more of a level playing field there. The other thing I was just going to mention about third-party litigation funding is that we're in the middle of, on the federal level, a piece of legislation that will help. Now, when we talk about legal system abuse reform. It's really a state issue. It's a state by state issue. It's a long game. There's no federal silver bullet. What we'd all love is just one bill that goes through and fixes the whole country, but that's not how it works. But third-party litigation funding is one of the few areas that we have had some pieces of legislation, and we have one moving right now. It's in the big, beautiful bill, as everyone likes to call it, that's moving through the Senate right now. And basically, what it does is there's a loophole for litigation funders where they don't pay taxes. The plaintiffs who get the awards are paying taxes on those awards. Well, the big funders found a loophole and they don't have to pay taxes. And this language in the big, beautiful bill that was put in the Senate is going to provide, it's going to have a very high tax on the funders and on their awards that they receive. So we believe that will deter some of the funding that's going out there and help with our overall efforts.
Okay, you guys said a lot there. You covered a lot of ground. But first of all, I'm personally very pleased to see that we're providing some more transparency into the third-party litigation funding and the efforts there. And the fact that there's no silver bullet, I think, is interesting because, like you said, pieces of legislation are going in at the federal level, but you know, you kind of have to still get in the dirt and get in the weeds, you know, at the state level and still kind of work this thing state by state. And so seeing all that progress and the fact that we're gaining credibility with each state where we're seeing successes is really cool to see. Now, shifting gears a little bit, what challenges still remain in the legislative cycle? Start with Adam.
Yeah, I'm happy to touch on that. And I kind of alluded to some of those we're seeing in places like Louisiana, where maybe we're successful in, you know, seeing some reforms enacted. As I mentioned earlier, there's still some political headwinds that, you know, we'll be dealing with, you know, certainly moving forward. Even though Louisiana has a Republican governor, he is a trial attorney and he is, you know, closely aligned with the trial bar. And so there's certainly no love lost between the governor and our industry. And while we were able to get him to agree to sign some of those positive legal reforms outside of the legal system abuse banner, there was some onerous insurance regulatory efforts that were a priority for him to enact. And those became law where there's more stringent rate review of the market because he likes to put the challenges with costs for Louisiana consumers squarely at the feet of insurance carriers. And we would humbly and vociferously disagree with that. But nonetheless, we've seen some, you know, elements of not so positive results in places like that. And then you look at a place like Texas, you know, a deep red state, even in those states with the rise in populism, there are challenges that get presented for the insurance industry and for the business community in trying to enact legal system abuse reform. So this year, for example, we were very instrumental in being a part of a coalition to push forward a reform effort to cap damages on jury awards. And through the course of the legislative session that just concluded here a few weeks ago, those reform provisions at every step along the way just kept getting whittled down and whittled down to the point where there was really nothing in the final version of that bill that was put forward for the legislature. They did not ultimately pass it, which is probably a good thing because, you know, passing something that is a paper tiger really isn't going to do much to make a difference. And so it now gives us the opportunity to recalibrate, look at the political dynamics in a state like Texas. Where do we need to shift our strategy so that when the legislature goes back into session again, to use the lessons that we learned from this session, modify our approach, look at what we can do to build other voices into our coalition to move our priority agendas forward. And so that's what we'll continue to do in Texas and elsewhere.
Deidre, what would you say is taking place in Illinois and New York?
Yeah, so in Illinois, things were going well in the session. And then at the very last minute, in the last few days, the trial lawyers were able to get the Senate to waive all the rules and quickly pass a bill, a very bad bill, that we're right now trying to get the governor to veto. What it does is it really expands the ability to sue. So right now, you have to make a case to sue in Illinois. Well, this removes those barriers. And even if you're just registered in the state, you don't have any employees, the accident didn't happen in the state, you're not headquartered there, you are able to sue over what we call toxic torts. And so we're concerned it's going to increase claims. It's going to add cost to the system. Again, we are trying to veto it, but it was a last minute, very savvy move by the Troy lawyers to shove that through. And it will prevent business from coming into the state. So because they're not going to want to register in the state and do business there if their liability is being expanded. New York is another one I'll just mention. You know, that's always a challenge, New York. And so we had a lot of bills that we're working on right now. We have a wrongful death bill that expands that area, direct actions against third-party defendants. We have a consent to jurisdiction, time limit impeding on third-party defendants. So there was a lot in the legal system abuse reform in New York, and we are working hard to get those vetoed or amended, but we'll see what happens. So those were these two states. Illinois is just one piece of legislation, but New York is a larger challenge with so many of them.
I'm fascinated to hear about this game of chess that's taking place on the state level across the country. So it's like you have a game going on in Texas, you have a game going on in Illinois, you have a game going on in New York, and maybe there's some overlap between those individual games, but they're all still so different. How do you manage to keep all that straight? How are we able to figure out what each of those areas are doing and each of those states are doing? And I'm stumbling over my words trying to find the right question, but I think you see what I'm getting at though, right? I mean, just the various miniature battles that are taking place across the country, just trying to keep all that straight is really interesting to me. Is there anything you can add that maybe helps our listeners understand how we're able to do that differently in each location?
Maybe I can start with an answer there, and Deirdre, if you want to fill in as well. I think from our standpoint as the trade, it starts with sort of a principled approach of what are we seeking to achieve? We are seeking to achieve a more fair legal system that removes frivolous cost from the system for consumers. We're in the mission of protecting people. This is one way that we very much view that we protect people, is to create a fair and cost-effective legal system. So that's sort of the principle that we start with. And we have some known considerations that go into that because we know what the other side's motivation is. They are trying to line their pockets. That is their only motivation. That's what they care about. So we go into every individual state assuming those are the broad dynamics, understanding what the politics are in the individual state, building out a strategy that contemplates the particular political voices in that state, the influence of key voices in that state, what our focus is from an industry standpoint, how does the industry play in that state in terms of working to benefit consumers. And then we build out a strategy, we enlist the support of member companies, other coalition partners, and move forward that way. And we do that with the understanding that we're not going to solve every problem every year. It's an ongoing effort, an ongoing conversation. As Deirdre said, it would be great if we had the ability to just have one bill signed that fixed everything, but we just know that that's not the case. So we know we've got to be steady, methodical, continue to tell the story, continue to enlist voices to help us with that process. And that's where we see, even in the face of some headwinds or setbacks, we have a lot of proof points that we're moving the needle in the right direction.
And I'll only add, I mean, you did a great job, Adam, of laying that all out. It's very complex, but a shout out to APCIA, our trade association. We have a lot of great partners. And as I said, the coalition's building and people putting resources in. I mean, from Zurich's point of view, it's we want to help our customers here. That is our goal. We want to help them lower their claims costs. We want to help them fight these frivolous lawsuits. And so what we're doing is joining forces, putting resources in it, finding the partners like APCIA and our other trades to really, take this battle on. And it's kind of like we win the war. I think back to your point, Justin, earlier, it's like a game of chess. It's like you win a war, you win a pretty big war, then you get hit over here by by a loss. And so, that all comes with the game.
Indeed. Now, as we're able to pass some of the reform bills that will help us in this effort, what do those passages mean for businesses and consumers and the economy in general? I think we've already kind of touched on this subject, but I'll allow you to kind of touch on it again.
Yeah, I'll step in on that. I think I did sort of allude to some of those facts and figures that talk about the average cost for families. Well, the passage of these reforms over time is going to reduce those costs for consumers. You know, for families who are looking to be successful and, you know, invest money for their kids' college or things like that, it just gives more freedom to do that. From the business standpoint, it helps job creators create jobs. It helps bring more innovation into the economy. It helps bring more stability to local communities when you've got strong businesses who are there to support civic and philanthropic opportunities. So it kind of touches every part of society when you've got this cost reduction that leads the way. It helps. It just helps with growth in so many different ways, both from the personal family standpoint, but from, you know, a business growth standpoint and from an overall economic well-being standpoint.
And I guess now the $64,000 question. Yeah. I'll throw it your way, Deidre. What can businesses do to get involved?
This is my favorite question, and this is a great way to end this podcast, and that is to join the coalition, be part of the efforts. There was a while when we were educating everyone with the coalition, and then we moved to action, and that's where we're seeing a lot of the successful results, such as when I mentioned Florida and everything that's going on there to bring down insurance costs to fix that system. And I think that it's important, too, to kind of understand what the coalition is. As we've mentioned several times, it's the brokers, it's the carriers, it's the customers, it's the different areas. And what does it mean to join? It can mean whatever they want. You can listen and monitor and understand and just get information all the way to joining the coalition, activating employees in a state where we have a bill that we're trying to pass, or writing letters to the governor to veto a bill. It's all those things. The range is wide, and everybody's welcome under our tent. The more, the better. We have expanded it, and the momentum continues. So I think that's really the heart of being successful here is businesses joining this coalition to get us through this.
Well, this conversation was enlightening for me. I love hearing Adam's passion on this issue. I think it permeates the conversation and just really comes through. It's clear to see where you stand on this, Adam. There, under no uncertain terms, there is the right side and then there's not the right side, right?
And we believe we're on the right side. Let me just be clear about that.
Yeah. And then Deidre, I mean, you've helped put this in terms that are very simple to understand. I mean, last time you talked to us about this David versus Goliath mentality that exists. And this time you talked about us playing offense and playing defense. And I'm a huge sports fan, so it makes sense to me that, hey, you got to play offense and defense if you want to win ultimately. So Deidre, Adam, thank you both for joining us today. It was lovely having you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thanks, Justin. Yeah.
And thank you all for listening. If you want to learn more, you can visit our legal system abuse and social inflation hub at zurichna.com/legal system abuse. And if you like the show, you can leave a comment or a review wherever you get your favorite podcast, or you can drop us a note at media@zurichna.com. This has been Future of Risk, presented by Zurich North America.
The information in this audio recording was compiled from sources believed to be reliable for general information purposes and is intended for Zurich clients and business partners. The information contained here may be useful to you or your enterprise when developing your own policies and procedures. The policies and procedures applicable to your enterprise should take into account the specific circumstances of your business and business environment, which is beyond the capacity of this podcast. Any and all information provided is not intended to constitute advice of any nature and is specifically not legal advice, and accordingly, you should consult with your own legal counsel. We do not guarantee the accuracy of this information presented or any results, and further assume no liability in connection with this recording and the information provided therein. Moreover, Zurich reminds you that the information provided cannot be assumed to contain every acceptable safety and compliance procedure, or that additional procedures might not be appropriate under the circumstances. The subject matter of this recording is not tied to any specific insurance product, nor will adopting these policies and procedures ensure coverage under any insurance policy. We encourage listeners to seek additional information from credible sources. Thank you.